You're listening to MLB on TuneIn Live, the podcast.
Play ball!
Presented by Esurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Esurance, insurance for the modern world. We're giving you the best content from each episode of MLB on TuneIn Live. MLB on TuneIn Live airs weekdays from 7 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time on TuneIn.
Welcome into MLB on TuneIn, the podcast presented by Esurance. I'm Holden Kushner. Today I'm joined by J.P. Aaron Seabee, and we got some great topics for you in our triple play. We're going to dive right into that as we discuss the latest with Madison Bumgarner, Derek Jeter possibly becoming the next owner of the Marlins, and what to expect the rest of the season from the Blue Jays and the Rockies.
The MLB on TuneIn, Triple Play, presented by Esurance.
We do have some news here on Madison Bumgarner. Andrew Baggerly, who reports on the Giants up there in the Bay Area, is reporting that initial evaluation on Madison Bumgarner, no surgery. We'll start rehab in 4 to 5 days, might be mound ready in 2 months. So we're looking at least, you know, 8-9 week issue here for Madison Bumgarner. Extraordinarily serious from a baseball perspective. Obviously, outside of that, he's lucky because it probably could have been a lot more serious than it was. Big, big blow here for the Giants.
Yeah, I mean, this is a guy who we're talking about is the man of the postseason. He is the epitome of, your horse, your team leader. And to go out there and to do something stupid, and listen, man, I know we all like to have fun on our off days. We all like to do different things. Guys play golf. You know, you can get hurt playing golf. I mean, you can get hurt doing a lot of things. I've been, you know, riding four-wheelers before during the season, and you do different things. But man, you have to make sure if you are going to do that, because it's tough to live your life in the bubble, and if you're a person like him who likes to go and do things like that, you need to be so cautious. There shouldn't have ever been, if you're going to ride the dirt bike, ride the dirt bike, but ride it in some kind of field or some kind of property that you know that there is nothing that can happen to you if you got hurt. And so it was very, very odd to me to see that. And again, it has to make a lot of his teammates upset. And he's one of their guys and he's one of their leaders, but it's selfish to me in the sense of, man, you're in the middle of the season. You're going to tell me, listen, we all want to do things, man. You don't think that I want to go out there and all of us on off days want to go do things, but I didn't do it because I knew that I had to go out there and play. And now he lets down, you know, 25 guys in an organization because he is their horse. He is their ace. He is the guy who makes the difference. And so,
but is anybody going to say that to him, really? I mean, he's so important to that franchise. Are you really going to go up to Madison Bumgarner? And he said he apologized one-on-one with every single guy in that clubhouse. I mean, are you going to say I'm angry at you for this? No, that's not something you do with Bumgarner, right? You're just happy he's healthy.
No, you're pissed off at him. And you everybody knows that. That's why he went there and he said I'm sorry to every single person one-on-one on that team because he knows that he let him down. Now, once he apologizes, we're all grown men. You know, we're not going to just hold him, like, just hold that over his head and say, man, you're killing us and it's your fault and stuff like that. That's not it. But, again, you're not happy about it. I wouldn't be happy if a guy like that, if I'm playing and I'm trying to win and I know he is one of the most important parts of that team, and then now he's hurt and he's gone for 2 months and we may not win because of that. That's what for me makes the biggest difference, and it really, really would bother guys, and I'm sure guys were bothered it, and he knew that guys were going to be bothered. That's why he went and apologized one-on-one to every single guy, because he knew that he screwed up royally.
And then there's the big story out of a place you're very familiar with, Miami. How about Derek Jeter and Jeb Bush going in and buying the Miami Marlins from Jeffrey Loria, who's ready to sell the team, $1.3 billion. It's an agreement in principle, so there's still some hurdles, but the bid went to Jeb Bush and Derek Jeter's group, which is an interesting group, but obviously, you know, Bush has, that family has a lot of money. They've been owners before, the Texas Rangers with George. You've got Derek Jeter, he'd be the face, the credibility in baseball there. I mean, I wonder, I'm saying to myself, why does Derek Jeter want a piece of the Marlins? But then again, why does Derek Jeter not want a piece of the Marlins? There's only room for growth. There's just been so much untapped potential down there with the Marlins because of what I believe is mismanagement over the last, 10, 12 years or so. This is a great opportunity for Major League Baseball and the Jeter-Bush duo to save this franchise because right now it's just wallowing. And by the way, I'm so desperate to get rid of that flying fish thing out in left field. Gosh. I would take a Jeb sign with an exclamation point next to it as opposed to that damn thing. Oh, my gosh. Maybe that's the first thing Jeter and Bush do if indeed they get this done. Get rid of that thing.
Yeah,
recycle it.
Yeah, that thing. Just donate it to somebody, to a charity of their choice. Sell it and donate the money to a charity of the choice. But, you know, I'm very excited as a person who was born and raised in Miami, Florida, grew up watching the Marlins. I am super, super excited. I've always read that Jeter at some point wanted to own a baseball team. He had always talked about that publicly. And, you know, why not? When you can do everything that Jeter's done in his life and be good at it, and you have the money that he has, I imagine, you know, he's following in a person who people have probably never heard of, Michael Jordan. He was a pretty good basketball player. And then he owns a team, and I think he's, you know, obviously been a mentor for Jeter, and now he's doing that on the business side. So it would be nice for him to do that, and I think that it would turn around the Marlins. It would help the fans. The fans would be very excited. I know that not a lot of people are very fond of Mr. Loria. I know for me, I've met him once. I wasn't fond of him. He kind of big-leagued me, but, you know, I'm excited. It could be something really, really good, something that city's needing, something that organization's needing, and hopefully it's true and that it happens.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. This would be great for baseball because let's face it. You know, Loria has taken some bumps and bruises there. There's a segment of the population in Miami that feels like they were built when they built that new stadium, that the city ended up having to pay more than they thought they were going to. Whether or not that's true, I guess perception is reality. I know that there are a lot of people in Miami that are still upset about that. They had the new stadium open in 2012. Their attendance is in the bottom quarter. They have not put a very good team together for a while as well. They got that 2003 World Series with them. They just haven't gone to the playoffs. What is it, about a dozen years now? They got the second longest streak in baseball of not getting to the playoffs. And it's really tough not getting to the playoffs in these days when you at least have these wild cards, you know? So Derek Jeter's a proven winner. You know, Bush has the backing. Probably a lot more money than Derek Jeter, believe it or not, although Jeter is just completely loaded. But it's interesting if this does get sold, because if you remember back in 2002, it was a three-team transaction. You remember this? Because you had the Expos, you had the Marlins and the Red Sox. So John Henry ends up going and taking over the Red Sox. You had baseball taking over the Expos, and then the Marlins end up going to Jeffrey Loria. And he inherited an organization that, you know, in 2003 won the World Series. Yes, was he the owner then? Yes. Was that organization just built already when he took it over? Absolutely. Payroll is up to $120 million. We'll see if that stays. I think it'd be fascinating to see a Yankee legend in Don Mattingly and an owner, a Yankee legend in Derek Jeter. There's a lot of interesting things that could happen here, and I have a hard time believing that the situation would get worse than it already is down there in Miami, because there's not a lot of love between the two sides. And let's also not forget, JP, that back in the whole Carlos Guillen, or Ozzie Guillen situation, where that just pissed off the whole Cuban population down there. And Ozzie later lost his job. But there's just a lot of animosity on the Miami fan base with Loria. And this change would be big for that organization.
Yeah, and I think it'd be big for the organization. And the one thing that stands out to me is now Jeter takes over. You have Jeb Bush, who's very politically, obviously, engaged in Florida. Think about the money that these guys are going to be bringing in advertising just right out of the gate of people that are going to want to be a part of that organization just because they have that name Jeter on it. I think mm-hmm. people would be smart to do that, and it'd be a more valuable team just because of his name. Jeb obviously would help out and do, you know, whatever he needs to do. But I think, you know, just like the Dodgers, when they made that purchase, the big name was Magic Johnson. You know, everybody want it, that was a huge part of that. And so I think that's another big part of that is having a guy like Derek Jeter represent, you know, a part of that group. He's obviously the biggest attraction, and a lot of people are going to want to be put in that same sentence. If he's in the ownership, people are going to, you know, want to be a part of that as far as sponsors and fans and stuff like that, even players. So I'm excited. I hope this is true. I hope it happens. It'll be good for baseball, and it'll be good for Miami.
You got your Blue Jays, the team you were part of more than anybody else. They're struggling at 5-14. I was looking at a stat today. If you go back, teams that had 14 losses in their first 20 games, and no matter what, the Blue Jays are going to have 14 losses in their first 20 games because they've only played 19 at this point. Two of those teams have made the playoffs. One was way back in the early 1900s, and the other one was the 2002 Angels, which ended up winning the World Series. So it's going to be tough for them to dig themselves out of that hole. I don't see it happening. I just think the injuries, there's too much working against them right now. When you're moving your catcher over to third base, when your manager's getting ejected back-to-back nights, there's just a lot of panic going on right there, and I don't see that team being able to snap out of it. The Mariners, do they have a shot? Absolutely. Absolutely they have a shot. The Blue Jays, I think, are toast.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, my biggest thing is when can you officially tap somebody out? And I know, you know, history is meant to be broken for the most part. There's a lot of, you know, these records, these outstanding records. It's going to happen. Somebody's going to have to do it. And as a competitor, you always feel like you could possibly be that guy, that team, excuse me. So, you know, I'm still not completely, because if these guys go out and Toronto's, you know, even last year, they ran out however many games in a row and they won and they put themselves right back into it. So they can do it little by little. Obviously, they need their starting pitching to do it. Seattle, like you said, is a lot closer, and they have an opportunity in the West with a team like the Angels, who aren't that good. Oakland's really not that great, so they can go and beat up on some of those teams. The AL East, it's not that easy. Even Tampa is 500, and after that, Toronto's nowhere near. So at least, you know, the West Coast, they have a little bit more of options. The East Coast, these guys continue to win, so it makes it tougher. But that's why baseball is so interesting, man. It's, you never know until you start playing. You can make all the predictions you want. Some teams will come out of the gate doing some crazy things that you don't expect, like the Rockies, and then some teams that you expect to be good just don't really get going. And sometimes, you know, you look at the end of the year and they just dug themselves too much of a hole.
Well, you know what I think about the Rockies coming into the year? I like this team a lot. They have gotten off to a remarkable start, best team in the National League to this point from a records standpoint. They beat the Nats last night. They're 14-6, the Rockies are. They've won 7 of 8. And 4 in a row. They got their pitchers. Their average age of their starting pitcher is like 24 years old. And they got Herman Marquez making a start tonight. I mean, you talk about the Rockies. It's just been remarkable. Their pitching is improving at Coors Field. They've got a 3.90 ERA at Coors Field. That's 7th out of 15 teams in the National League for home ERA. If that continues, if they can get a home ERA there and pitch, you know, quite a bit better than that on the road, their offense and their bullpen are going to be able to carry them. I don't know if you're sold on the Rockies yet after 20 games. I've been sold on them since the offseason. I love the Holland signing. Where are you standing on the Rockies right now? Because I know you're wavering on the Blue Jays a little bit. It's natural to do so. I haven't heard you stick a fork in them yet.
Nope.
But have you bought into the Rockies?
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, even when we were out there, we talked about it. And you have been on the Rockies. I've been on their offense. And I just didn't know about their – I mean, everybody knew that they were going to hit. I mean, they got unbelievable offense there. And that's without Desmond, which he's going to be on track to come back. But Mark Reynolds has filled in very, very nicely there. So their offense has been good. And I told you at the beginning of the year, what stood out to me was their bullpen. Great teams that win have bullpens. They compared them to the year that the Rockies were great, to the 2007, I think it was, that they were talking about how great that bullpen was and comparing them to them this year and why they can win, why they've been able to close out games and all, is how great, one, their starting pitching has been great because Freeland's been good. All these guys, you know, have been good. But now you go to the bullpen and they have a lead late in the game because these guys can rake, and the bullpen's been lights out, and Holland has been freaking lights out.
He's been absolutely terrific to this point. He's been unstoppable. Jake McGee coming back from the knee issue there. But look at what's going on in the West. You talk about the Blue Jays coming out of the gate slow. How about the Giants? I mean, they're 7-13. They got no Bumgarner now. Their ace is down for an extended period of time. 6-8 weeks. I mean, if they're lucky, who knows how long
it's... Which is ridiculous, man. Gosh, that's so stupid.
Who knows how long it's going to take for him to come back? 6 games under .500. The Diamondbacks, I don't think, have staying power. They're ahead of them. The Dodgers are still ahead of them. The Dodgers are going and calling their top prospect up, Cody Bellinger. We'll talk about him in a few minutes, a little bit later on the show. But, I mean, at this point, would you take the Rockies over the Giants as far as projecting how well they'll do for the rest of the year? Are you ready to go that far to say that the Rockies are a playoff team ahead of the Giants right now?
Yeah, I definitely – I would say right now I'm going with – Colorado is going to be above ahead of San Francisco. But again, you can never count those guys out. Bochy always seems to just put great teams out there and winning teams. They've had a lot of injuries. I mean, you saw now they called up Drew Stubbs. Obviously, San Francisco is feeling the need to – they have a little bit – button. The way I always used to tell as a player is who is panicking quick and who is not is depending on who they call up. Because if you call up a guy, well, first off, they're starting to make moves. They designate Marrero. They bring up Stubbs. You know, they've had some injuries or whatever. And then now they're bringing up Arroyo, who's their, you know, he's been crushing it down in the minor leagues. He's a young kid. So that for me, when they're bringing up that kind of prospect this early in the year, they're going, dude, we need to be able to have something. We need a spark plug. We need somebody to be able to go out there and do it. Because if we don't turn it around right now, you know, like we're talking about, then it might be too late. And that's what that move has shown me. Same thing with the Dodgers is they're going out there and they're going, all right, well, time to bring up Bellinger. We've already messed around too much. We need him up here. And so they're doing that. So, again, these are teams, and these are why teams win. And some of the losing teams will go, no, they're too early. We don't want to start their clock, yada, yada, yada. And then they just keep on falling. And that just tells me that they used to tell me that, well, they're not really interested in winning. They're interested in developing. So that's how I feel about that.
Well, Bellinger, as far as he's concerned, I mean, they've just been hamstrung by injury. Injury after injury after injury for the Dodgers. You know, I look at it that way. They need outfielders. Bellinger is going to be the long-term solution at first base once Gonzalez moves on, whenever that is. But Bellinger is more of a necessity at this point. That team has so many injuries in their outfield, it just doesn't seem to stop, JP. So I'm going to look at that a little bit differently than I did with the Giants. You know, the Giants are basically, we need a solution. We need to stop the bleeding. We need a little bolt of energy. And they got it last night. They got the win. Tonight they're facing Kershaw, though. So we'll see if that carries on to another game here. But at 7-13, I think the Giants just in a different situation than the Dodgers.
Well, you got to think about it, though. Here's the way you have to look at it is if these are winning teams, right? These are winning organizations. Both have been to the playoffs the last year. So if you're looking at it, right, as a teams that win, and you've covered baseball for a while, teams that win bring up their prospects. They bring up their guys because I know that there's been injuries, but again, you can go in AAA and call up a guy who's a minor league signee who's not on the roster, and you can bring him up, have him out there for a little bit while Peterson gets ready, and then ship him back down and make sure Bellinger goes down there and develops. You've seen the difference between a winning team, which I think are both those teams, and losing teams who just are like, well, we're not going to bring up this guy. Yeah, he's killing it down there, but we're not going to bring him up and speed up his clock. Can you agree with me on that?
Absolutely.
And that's what that's what I think is going on with the Dodgers. Not that they're going panic button, but they're going, hey, we're a winning team. We have the opportunity to spend the money that we need to spend. We're bringing this guy up. And it's time for this guy to get to the big leagues and start helping us out because we need the win.
You're listening to MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance. And we'll be right back with more after this. TuneIn is your home for all NFL action, now featuring No Huddle.
Cordell Stewart, he's just that versatile.
And Brian Weber.
I'm a middle-aged white guy. It's a team effort here.
You're a great guy. Excellent young man. I appreciate it.
I wouldn't go.
I gave you young man
Save
for that
the
one.
Tape. Excellent young man,
this
Brian
is the
Weber.
Last time I'll say it, though.
Cordell Stewart and Brian Weber will break down all things NFL.
I'm not doing truth. I'm telling you what the outcome is going to be.
That's the problem I'm having with you right now.
Truth is the name of your
because
book.
Because you know
Sell
what's
that book
wrong
again.
And you know what's right. You would prefer to go with what's wrong because the pundits are the ones that determine what happens.
I'm telling you what's going to happen.
No, I'm asking you.
The name of the show is not shoulda, woulda, coulda.
Let's try this one
That's
more
our podcast.
Let me rephrase
right?
this
We're
one
gonna
more
do
time.
That on
Let
Sunday.
Listen live Monday through Friday from 1 to 4 p.m. Eastern or catch all the replays and interviews on demand on the NFL on TuneIn.
It's like us being on our app and being able to come into your cell phones. And it's different now.
This is MLB on TuneIn, the podcast, presented by eSurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Now, here are your hosts, Holden Kushner and J.P. Arencibia.
There were 12 games on Tuesday after three East Coast games were postponed due to rain. And to recap the action now, we got the best day ever, the Home Run Tracker, and statistically speaking. Time for us now to do what we do best here, and that is talk about the guys that had better days than everybody else.
Best day ever on MLB on TuneIn Live.
Hey, JP, did Eric Thames hit a home run tonight?
Is today a day that ends with Y?
Yes, it is. Oh, so well, Eric yeah, Thames, my best day ever. Come on, he's got as many home runs as the Red Sox. 11 home runs for Eric Thames. He now holds the April record for home runs in Brewers history. He's the best player in a game in a month of April. Just for the month of April. I'm not saying the best player in the game, period, but what he's done here the first 3 weeks of the season is something special. Eric Thames, best day ever.
He deserves it, but my best day ever goes to a guy who went 2 for 5, so mm-hmm. not crazy amount of hits, but he went 3 RBIs, which was good enough by himself to beat the opposing team. And then he robbed a home run, so that I give him another RBI, so that would be 5 RBIs, or 4 RBIs, for the one and only Josh Reddick from the Houston Astros.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Yeah.
On the mound, I'm going to go Gerrit Cole. Did he take the loss? Yes. Did he deserve it? No. That's why losses, wins and losses, 7 innings, 2 hits, 1 unearned run, no walks, and 8 strikeouts. I mean, he was the best pitcher on the mound that game against Cubs tonight. He lost 1-0. Wasn't his fault. He was awesome. Gerrit Cole, best day ever.
And I'm going to stay on the AL West with the old Houston Astros with Dallas Keuchel with the CG win. 6 hits, 2 runs, 5 punchies. He gave up really – all he gave up was 2 homers. Those were the only runs that he gave up. But to go CG on the road, very impressive. And so he's my best day ever.
All right, very good. Let's look at all the home runs from tonight.
MLB on TuneIn Live, Home Run Tracker.
Quite a few of them. Austin Jackson of the Indians hit the first one of the day, 380 feet, 100 miles an hour off the bat. James McCann of the Tigers hit one 366. Justin Upton, his teammate, hit one 407. And their teammate, Alex Avila, the catcher, hit one 428 feet, 106 miles an hour off the bat. Gene Segura back in the lineup for the Mariners, hit one 408. Danny Valencia, also with the Mariners, 400 feet. Those came in the fifth inning today of the Mariners' 19-9 loss to the Tigers. Kenny's Vargas blasted one for the Twins, 357 feet. Michael Brantley for the Indians, 377. Nelly Cruz hit one out. Miguel Sano, 110 miles an hour off the bat. Another night where Miguel Sano has the hardest hit home run. That homer went 437 feet. Hernan Perez of the Brewers, 413. Eric Thames, 357. Paul Goldschmidt ties for the longest home run of the night, 438 feet, 105 miles an hour off the bat. Joey Gallo hit one only 424 feet, 109 off the bat. Oh, my goodness. He crushed it, too. Adam Duvall of the Reds, 427. Mikey Matuk, 411. And Cargo hit one 436 on a cold, wet night in Colorado. Jose Martinez, first Major League home run for the Cardinals. Tied the game up. Also went 390 feet. 104 off the bat. Mark Reynolds, longest home run, tied with Paul Goldschmidt, 438, 101 off the bat. Daniel Descalso went deep off of Craig Stammen. Brandon Moss hit one 396 after he struck out, six straight at bats. And Mike Moustakas hit one 415 feet. Let's look a little deeper into the stats.
Statistically speaking,
JP, Russell Martin, fourth player in Blue Jays history to start at third base and catcher in the same season. Did you ever do that?
Heck no. I know I did not do that, but I bet you Yan Gomes is on that list as well.
Dallas Keuchel has started his season 4-0 for the second time in his career. Began the 2015 Cy Young campaign 6-0. Eric Thames has more home runs in six games against the Reds, which is eight, than any other hitter in Major League Baseball has home runs, period. So he's got eight home runs against the Reds. Nobody in baseball has eight home runs besides for him. His 11 home runs this month. MLB record for most home runs in April is 14. Pujols and A-Rod did it. 06 for Pujols, 07 for A-Rod. So we got to keep an eye on that, right? I mean, with him, that might be like one game away from hitting the record in April. Dallas Keuchel, 10 complete games since 2014. Fifth most of any pitcher in Major League Baseball over that span. Last time the Tigers scored 19-plus without Miguel Cabrera was August 8th, 2001. And a 19-6 win over the Rangers. They scored 13 in the ninth inning that game. Exclamation point, says our producer, Abe Gordon. White Sox scored 8-plus runs against the Royals two times in the last two games. They'd done that two times in the previous 90 meetings. Couple of my own that I dug up here. First time the Tigers have scored at least 13 runs a consecutive game since doing it three times back in 1993. They did it three straight times in 93. And you got the White Sox scoring 10 runs in consecutive games against the Royals for the first time since 2004. That is statistically speaking. That's it for MLB on TuneIn, the podcast presented by Esurance. Make sure to join us on MLB on TuneIn Live at 7 Eastern each weeknight. During the daily 5-hour show, you'll not only hear all of what you heard in the podcast, you'll also have the chance to listen to the games, get the action as it happens. For Abe and Dustin in the LA studio and JP Aaron CB alongside me, I'm Holden Kushner, and we'll catch you mañana.
Thank you for listening to MLB on TuneIn, the podcast presented by Esurance, official sponsor of Major League Baseball. Esurance, insurance for the modern world. Catch us every weeknight on TuneIn, where we take you around Major League Baseball with live listening, analysis, player interviews, and much more. Plus, be sure to check out our other great content on TuneIn, featuring the very best in sports, music, news, and talk. On TuneIn, get caught up in the moment with more than 100,000 music stations and 5 million podcasts from around the world. Exclusive sports content, including live MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL games, and 24/7 news coverage from CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News Radio. Tune in, your everything audio app.